Welcome to Radio Entrepreneurs. I know you've been a guest several times, and today we're talking about getting organized. And in your world of HR, how do you help companies to get organized?
Well, I help companies get organized and compliant either at the start of their business or throughout the lifetime of the company up to the end when they hopefully have an event and move on to some giant sale that makes them very happy. But I help them create a accountable, compliant workplace so that their employees have the right documentation that they need by state and federal law, and also best practice policies and procedures. And to me, it's really important to get started early. It's way easier to put a handbook and policies and procedures in place when you have two or three or four employees than to suddenly turn around when you have 15 and no one knows what the vacation policy is, and then you have to sort of recreate the wheel. So I help them at various points, but primarily when they get started, to get compliant and accountable.
And Megan, we've seen it a lot where people buy an off-the-shelf product and it doesn't even meet mass compliant rules and regulations, and they just buy something quick because they say, well, I want to have an HR policy, and the benefits aren't meeting what's stated in the handbook. Talk a little bit about that.
Right. Well, I think sometimes people either go to the internet and download things, which of course is a really bad idea, or they might get something from a payroll company that's a boilerplate handbook or policies that largely may not apply to them. So I think it's important to have something that's customized to their business and to their environment. I've had clients ask for sort of scary handbooks because they want people to really be afraid that if they don't punch in, something bad will happen. To clients that want very culturally fitting language that maybe they're a marketing company or some sort of new business and they want to attract and retain hip people who don't want to be intimidated by their handbook. So I think it's important to have something that reflects your culture and your organization.
And in addition to that, I know a lot of small companies will say, well, does that apply to us? Does harassment training apply? Do we need a WISP? Speak to that a little bit, because there is a lot of people that just think, well, we're under the radar screen. You hear different numbers. I'm under 11. I'm under 50. I'm under...
Right. Of course, the Department of Labor is not going to buy that as an excuse when they come in on an audit.
It's not a good defense?
No, it's not. No. I think that people have to understand that these rules and regulations do apply to them. Once you have those pesky employees, you do have to pay attention. And as people have been talking about the Weinstein situation and think that that only happens in big organizations, there are many small organizations that have issues with harassment and illegal behavior in the workplace, and they have to deal with it. And I find that, unfortunately, a lot of business owners think it won't happen to them, and it can, and it does.
And
so
what about,
they have to be mindful.
What about even onboarding a new person? So you start a business, and it's just you, and then you go to put your first significant person. There's an onboarding process, and you need offer letters and et cetera. I mean, that's another often overlooked, I think.
Right, right. Because you don't want to do something that will inadvertently create an employment contract. You want to make clear that it is at-will employment, meaning that you can terminate them for any unlawful reason, and they can also leave at any time that they want. So these things are important to put into place early on because, as you mentioned, suddenly you're at 11 employees, and you might be governed by the Massachusetts Earned Sick Leave Act, where suddenly at 11 employees that earned sick leave is paid. And if you're not paying attention to it, you can grow and then migrate your way into problems because you think, oh, I did it this way when I had two employees. Now I have 15 and or more, and it just becomes more complicated.
So tell us about the structure of your relationship with clients. How do you typically work? Is it a consulting role that you play? Is it a interim HR role? Is it an ongoing process?
All of the above. We act as an external HR department for a company. So that might be setting up custom handbook policies and procedures in the beginning, and that work is normally done on a flat fee basis to get them, you know, the posters, policies, procedures kind of thing. And then on an ongoing basis, we work either as back office HR support, doing more routine day-to-day things, or advising them on employee management. To me, it should never be a surprise when you terminate someone, but as we all know, everyone hates performance reviews. So I like to put into place an easy system that will actually be used to keep people accountable. And then hopefully it won't be a surprise if you have to part ways. And then also on the other end, if a company is being acquired, we assist with due diligence to make sure everything is in order so that when a prospective buyer comes in, they're not finding a harassment case smoldering in the personnel file, and that might affect the value of the business. We also do project work, workplace investigations. Harassment in particular seems to be, unfortunately, something that we're involved with frequently, or a project that maybe someone with a regular HR director in-house just doesn't have the bandwidth to perform. So it's all of that as needed or regularly servicing the client.
And for the newer client, how scalable is this? I mean, you'll drop down to a small startup, correct?
Right. I mean, you know, once you have one employee, there are certain things that you need to do. To your point, John, about an offer letter, I just did that for a small IT company that two founders are now hiring their first employee, and I put together an offer letter template and the essential documents for them to give that new starter. And then as they grow, maybe those documents and procedures and policies need to be changed, and we can add or adapt them as their company morphs.
And it's such an important service, but Jonathan, I think you stated earlier, a lot of times it gets delegated to someone else in the firm, a bookkeeper or a controller, and they can't know all the rules. They don't have the time to dedicate it. As a business is growing, though, if they're going to start thinking about closing or selling or perpetuating, you offer an audit service that could be pretty helpful too, right? I mean, so that everything's in order at the end as well.
Right. Again, for due diligence, we go through and make sure that they have the right documentation, the right personnel files are being maintained, and everything that they would hopefully want to know or a prospective buyer would want to know about their company.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And that really involves, as you said, it's a due diligence process, but is it checklist driven? So there are certain things that every company must have in place and ensuring that, you know, as you said, those skeletons aren't, you know, it's one thing not to have a document that you're required to have. It's a whole other thing to have a, you know, personnel file that speaks to harassment or things of that nature. So it seems to me that some of that is prescriptive in nature, and some of it is compliance.
Right. Well, I think there is a checklist that, well, I know there's a checklist that we use, and that's a stepping stone to what other issues might be there that someone is going to uncover. So again, you may have ticked all the boxes along the way for different compliance and distributing mandatory notices for your different benefit plans or the like, or having people sign off on things. But there's also that substantive thing that needs to be looked at about, have you any surprises, skeletons in the closet? You know, going through the personnel files, looking at, is this a potential liability that they might be looking at or the prospective buyer might find and now say, well, what the heck happened here?
One area that seems to me to be a challenge within some of the compliance issues is now that we have distributed workforces and completely remote-based companies.
Right.
So how do those statutes apply to company? You know, how do you post something in a lunchroom if you don't have a lunchroom?
Well, that's a big question. I mean, a lot of companies, now I recommend that if they don't have an intranet is a good place to drive your employees to, they just have a shared HR folder. And so I have many, many clients that have people in California and North Carolina and Massachusetts, and we have a shared HR folder that has all the federal and individual state posters, most current version of the handbook, and all of the policies. And so the employees are told, when you have an issue or a question about vacation, why don't you go read the handbook that's on the H drive or whatever, as opposed to just sitting there wondering and or bugging your manager about something that's already in your documents. So that's one way to sort of make sure that people have what they need when there's no lunchroom. And also it's important to have remote work policies. What do we expect from people when they're working remotely? Do we expect them to be available and have a, you know, on the phone, so to speak, at 8 o'clock, or are they able to work flexibly, and how do we define that? So it's important to delineate all of that so then you can appraise performance. How do you know if Megan's doing a good job if you don't know when she's supposed to be at her desk? And let's have some clear goals and objectives for Megan so that we can check in with her and make sure she's doing those things, even though we're not seeing her every day.
One of the things I was going to say that I see challenging in the marketplace is, with the advent of new work rules, so to speak, or environments, you have companies that stick to old world policies. And as a result, they get themselves into challenges of retention.
Right.
Because you've got let's call it Gen X or whomever, you've got a workforce that says, I don't want to be strapped to a desk all day long, or I don't want this, or, I've worked with a client in the past, a very white collar environment that had insisted on people clocking in and clocking out every day. And I said, well, that's an antiquated notion of work.
Right.
And so do you find that you come across companies that, haven't morphed and converted to the new realities of running an organization?
Yes, there are. And there are some who have adapted, who I have several clients that use something called the results only work environment, which basically says we don't care where you are or when you do the job, as long as you do the job. And I've put into place procedures where, okay, if everybody's working under this environment where we're not expecting them to necessarily be at their desk at 2 o'clock, how do we know they're not at their desk at 2 o'clock and that they've gone to watch their daughter's soccer game? And, they come back and they work until 8 or 9 o'clock at night and they get the job done. That's really all that matters at the end of the day. And so how do you implement policies and procedures so that your company can adopt that kind of philosophy? And it works for some companies and for some it doesn't.
And the other complexity that I think we've touched on a number of times today is people working in other states. We've had people get served letters because they don't have short-term disability in New York. And so how do you work around that? I mean, that is a major complication.
Well, that's a major compliance issue that your office manager or controller who's doing HR part-time would not necessarily be aware of. So it is important to pay attention to that. It's great that you can hire that person in California and he or she is the best person for the job, but oh my gosh, you need workers' comp in California now. You need to register for unemployment and with the state Secretary of State's office and things like that that, speaking from experience, clients may not always think about right away. And then 9 months go by and suddenly, oh my goodness, we didn't do that.
And we get a fine letter.
Right, right. And then you get into some difficulties at that point in time. So it's important to sort of be aware of that at the beginning so that you avoid that compliance issue.
So it's going to be a challenge within your organization is staying up on, every domain's requirements.
Well, that's what we do, so that we have a client with an employee in California, which is a whole world unto itself, or other states, we become familiar with that and notify the client about what they need to do. And in New York, that there's now a paid family leave act, or in such and such a state, it's harder to enforce a non-compete. So we try to stay up to date with all of that and to advise the client accordingly.
Good stuff. Our guest on Radio Entrepreneurs has been Megan Taylor of Taylor HR Group. And Megan, what's the best way for our listeners to get in touch with you?
They can check out my website at www.taylorhrgroup.com or my email is mtaylor@taylorhrgroup.com.
Wonderful. You've been listening to Radio Entrepreneurs coming to you from the offices of JED Insurance Network. And our guest has been Megan Taylor, and wonderful having you again on Radio Entrepreneurs.
Great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll be right back with another segment on Radio Entrepreneurs.